everybody. I'd like to I'm Tim Burkett, the guiding teacher here. Most of you know me, and I'd like to introduce Wanda Isle. Most of you know her. Wanda has been a priest here for several years, priest in training. She's been practicing here for almost a decade. And she is also an author and an editor, and has edited a book that will be coming out published by Shambhala Press, which is a compilation of talks I have given over the years. So, although she told me yesterday it's not going to come out for a year, so that's because Shambhala, I don't know if you guys know about Shambhala, but they're so backed up, they've gotten so large that we just have to wait our turn. Well, anyway, welcome, Wanda.
Thank you, Tim. Hi, everybody. Thanks for coming. Leo, thank you. That was wonderful, as always. So I'm going to be talking about a koan, a wild fox koan. It's kind of a long koan, so we'll just dive right in. First, I'll read it, and then I'll talk about it. So this is case two in the Gateless Gate, the wild fox koan. Once, when Bai Zhang gave a series of talks, a certain old man was always there listening along with the monks. He usually left right after the talk, but one day he remained. Bai Zhang asked, "Who are you standing before me?" The man said, "I am not actually a human being. I lived and taught on this mountain at the time of Kashyapa Buddha. One day a student asked me, 'Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?' I said to him, 'No, such a person does not fall under the law of cause and effect. Because of this, I was reborn as a wild fox for 500 lifetimes. Please say a turning word and free me from my wild fox body.' Then he asked Bai Zhang, 'Does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not?' Bai Zhang said, 'Such a person does not ignore the law of cause and effect.' Immediately, the old man was enlightened. Bowing, he said, 'I am now liberated from the body of the wild fox. I shall remain on this mountain. My fox body is behind the monastery. Please bury it with the usual services for a deceased monk.' So an announcement was made that there would be funeral services for a monk after the midday meal. The monks asked one another, 'What's going on? Everyone here is doing fine.' After the midday meal, Bai Zhang led the assembly to a large rock behind the monastery and revealed the corpse of a fox. Following the customary procedure, they cremated the body. That evening, Bai Zhang talked about what had happened that day. Wang Po responded, 'A teacher of old gave a wrong answer and became a wild fox for 500 lifetimes. What if he hadn't given the wrong answer?' Bai Zhang said, 'Come closer and I will tell you.' Wang Po went closer and slapped Bai Zhang's face. Laughing, Bai Zhang clapped his hands with delight and said, 'I thought the barbarian had a red beard, but now I see before me the red-bearded barbarian.'" So, this is a very unusual koan. First of all, it's long. There are four parts to it that I'll be talking about. The interdependent nature of self, which means also the interdependent nature of the universe. Second, cause and effect, which in Buddhism means dependent co-arising. Third, the third part, the funeral of the fox. What was that all about? And then the fourth part is Wang Po's question. So I used both Sakita's book and also Robert Aiken's book as guides, but I won't be talking about either of their interpretations. I'll be talking about how this koan spoke to me personally. So you've been warned. This very unusual koan is like a koan wrapped in a story. And this story could be mythological in nature, or it could be just a fable, depending on your interpretation. The difference being, a fable is moralistic in nature, and a mythological story points directly to the human psyche. So there are two different ways of looking at this. Robert Aiken went with the fable. Sakita just talked about levels of consciousness, which would lean more towards the mythological interpretation. So, back to the koan. It probably started out, you know, just the very simple koan in the form that most koans are. Probably started out something like this. Doesn't enlightenment, a monk asked his teacher, does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect? The teacher said, an enlightened person does not ignore the law of cause and effect. And upon hearing this, the monk was enlightened. So that's the form of a usual koan. As for the rest of it, Bai Jing probably just made it up. Maybe he felt that his monks had become too complacent. So when he happened to come across the body of a dead fox, he got an idea. And he made up a story that would put his monks inside a koan. So he's pretty clever, huh? So what drew me to this story was the mythological elements. The old man didn't say, I lived and taught on this mountain a long, long time ago. He didn't say that. He said, I lived and taught on this mountain during the time of Kashyapa Buddha, which is one of the ancient mythological Buddhas. So when he opened that door, I just strolled right in. Robert Aiken opened the door a little bit, but he didn't really go in. Here's what he said. He said, if you have read studies of myths and folk tales by Heinrich Zimmer or Joseph Campbell, you know that the deepest function of the stories is to present configurations of the human psyche. You understand the story of Bai Jing and the fox to the degree that you understand yourself. So that was Robert Aiken, sticking his toe in the door, but he didn't really go in. So, but he said, we will understand this koan to the extent that we understand ourselves. But to understand ourselves from a Buddhist point of view, we have to change our usual way of thinking about what it means to understand. Usually, and you know, our ordinary way of understanding something is having the ability to analyze it, to categorize it, to measure it, to quantify it in some way, to categorize it into this and not that, that and not this. But Buddhist understanding is different from that. Buddhist understanding is experiential. It's embodiment. In Buddhism, to understand something is to experience it deeply. The old man embodied the wild fox. So the first thing this koan calls on us to do is to look deeply at the nature of self and other. And it helps us to do that. Prominent Zen teachers were often named for the mountain where they practiced. So Bai Jing was actually the name of the mountain where the monastery was located. The old man who lived and taught on this mountain so long ago, he was also Bai Jing. So we're given this image, the past Bai Jing, the present Baijing, and the mountain Baijing. But they're all the same Baijing. So that's a great image to point directly to the boundless nature of things, of self, of everything. When Joseph Campbell said that every element of a myth represents an aspect of the human psyche, when he said that, he was pointing to this same boundlessness. Here's how Thich Nhat Hanh described the boundless nature of self in one of his books. During his 6 hours of sitting under the Bodhi tree, Buddha saw that there was a multiplicity of beings inside of him. Stones, birds, mountains, stars, all that existed. All things were interconnected and interdependent on everything else. He saw that every cell of his body contained all of heaven and earth and spanned the three times, past, present, and future. So that was Thich Nhat Hanh getting into Buddha's head a little bit. So first the koan established the boundless nature of self, which includes everything, and then it presented a manner of great confusion for Zen practitioners. One day a monk asked me, does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not? I said to him, no, such a person does not fall under the law of cause and effect. Because of this, I was reborn as a wild fox for 500 lifetimes. Please say a turning word and free me from my wild fox body. Then he asked Baijing, does an enlightened person fall under the law of cause and effect or not? And Baijing said, such a person does not ignore cause and effect. So now we're going to talk about cause and effect, second part of this koan. Buddhist teachings tell us that in an interdependent universe, everything is the cause of everything else. Everything is the effect of everything else. And it's called dependent co-arising. So multiple causes, multiple effects, all arising at the same time. So cause and effect co-arise. But that's pretty hard to get our mind around, huh? Cause and effect co-arise. Buddha expressed it like this. This is because that is. This is not because that is not. This arises because that arises. This ceases because that ceases. Okay. Thich Nhat Hanh gives us an image which is meant to be helpful. The tree gives rise to and nourishes its leaves, but the leaves also nourish the tree. Leaves are not just the children of the tree, they're also the mother of the tree. Because of the leaves, the tree exists. Because of the tree, the leaves exist. So, that's lovely, huh? Yeah. What does it mean? I mean, in our everyday life, what does it mean? So I started with the simplest example that I could think of cause and effect. And from there, I wanted to find my way to this lovely tree and its leaves. That's how I wanted to try and understand what it was I was being helped to understand. So the simplest example of cause and effect I could think of was, I drop a glass and it breaks. So how do you bring that around to the co-arising of cause and effect? First I drop the glass, then it breaks. But the Buddhist teaching of koan rising says multiple causes, multiple effects, all happening at the same time. So then another question came to mind. What does a broken glass have to do with suffering? Does a broken glass cause suffering? Because this is Buddhism. And if we can't bring a teaching back to the real world of suffering, then we're just theorizing. And Buddha was not interested in that. Then my friend Lainey just happened to mention something that Daniel Brown said. Daniel Brown wrote the book Pointing to the Great Way. He said that reactivity is the cause of all suffering. And this is how he interprets the second noble truth. Reactivity is the cause of all suffering. So now back to the glass. When I see the broken glass, if I react with anger, then there's suffering. If I say, I am always breaking things, now I'm projecting this event into the past, coloring my perception of my personal history, deeper suffering. If I say, I'm just a clumsy person, now I'm conditioning the future, never-ending suffering. Now I'm experiencing suffering. Now I'm projecting suffering into the past. Now I'm projecting suffering into the future. Everything is happening now. So, one cause, broken glass, a multitude of effects that span the three times, right? That's not good enough. Buddha said, a multitude of causes, a multitude of effects. And I don't think he was flexible about that. So, back to the glass. When I drop the glass, if my reaction is anger, it's because my conditioning predisposes me to anger. My anger exists because my conditioning exists. But my conditioning exists because my family exists, my culture exists, my memories exist. So multiple causes, multiple effects, all arising together. This is because that is. When conditioned reactivity arises, suffering arises. Not nearly as lovely as Thich Nhat Hanh's metaphor of the tree and the leaf, though, huh? But Buddha also said, this ceases because that ceases. What if, when I broke the glass, I just broke the glass? And then I swept up the broken glass, I got another glass, being more careful not to break the glass again. When a calm mind arises, compassion arises. When compassion arises, wisdom arises. So, there's the lovely image of the tree and the leaves. It's an expression of the innate joy of interdependent co-arising. Because the tree and the leaves don't exist out there. The tree and the leaves exist inside our minds. And compassion and an open heart, calm mind, they all sustain each other. They all arise at the same time. But you can see how the past Baijing, the old man, might assume that he doesn't fall under the law of causation, right? You can see how that could happen. How his confusion could happen. Because he's a Zen teacher. He'd been practicing for a long time. He broke a glass, yet there was no suffering. Because he didn't fall under the law of cause and effect. It's because he had been practicing for a long time, and so conditioned reactivity did not arise. So when the master said an enlightened person does not ignore cause and effect, the old man finally saw through his confusion about cause and effect. So, bowing, the old man said, I am now liberated from the body of the wild fox. I shall remain on the mountain. My fox body is behind the monastery. Please bury it with the usual services for a deceased monk. So, I read several interpretations of this koan, this part of the koan, this part that pertains to the wild fox. And they mostly talked about, they talked in terms of karmic punishment when it came to the wild fox, saying that in Asian folklore, the wild fox is like the lowest creature there is. It's like a vermin or a rodent. Robert Aiken said, called it occultly nasty. Occultly nasty. But these interpretations just didn't work for me. They just didn't resonate with me at all. I didn't find this interpretation helpful in my practice. I didn't find it helpful in my life to view the 500 lifetimes as a fox as karmic punishment. For one thing, I don't believe in karmic punishment. I believe in transformation and the path to transformation. We're either on that path or we evade that path. And I really don't believe in anything else. So I had to look elsewhere. And also, you know, viewing the fox as occultly nasty, as vermin, as rodents or whatever, these are just judgments. And judgments, opinions, prejudices, they're all just conditioned reactions. So this interpretation just didn't cut it with me. But there's also another reason why I don't think it even works for the story. Because the old man said, please bury it with the usual services of a deceased monk. So this suggests that the old man revered the fox, right? And in his commentary, Wu Man said, in Wu Man's commentary, that would be the guy who put these together, all these koans, Wu Man said, the old man enjoyed his time as a fox. And then, according to Wu Man, it's very important that we come to understand this aspect of the koan. It's very important that we come to understand this aspect of the koan. I think it's the most important part. So, again, what drew me to this koan was that it was not just a koan. It invited us into the realm of mythology. Throughout the story, there are hints that we are looking directly at consciousness itself, which also suggests the realm of myth. Not a fable, not a folktale, not having anything to do with moralistic ideas. In Asian mythology, going way back beyond the more recent overlay of fables and folktales, in Asian mythology, the fox is a messenger, a very mysterious messenger, because he's a messenger between the worlds. So we might say that the fox is a messenger between the world of one and the world of many. So the fox symbolizes insight in ancient Asian mythology, moments of deep spiritual growth, which mostly occur during our darkest moments, when we're closest to ourselves, when we're furthest away from the desires and ambitions of our ordinary life. And in times of tragedy or spiritual searching, very often we feel trapped. But Buddha said, at the core of all suffering, there is joy. But we have to experience our suffering, not run from it. We have to merge with the dark feelings and the overpowering sensations. We have to body each one of them. The old man embodied the wild fox for 500 lifetimes. So each time we truly embody a dark emotion until it dissolves, some insight into ourselves is experienced. It arises in the form of perhaps openness, of relief, or maybe it's just an exhale when we didn't even realize we were holding our breath. And people who've survived a tragedy and it changed them deeply, they always say that they're grateful for the tragedy. Tim talks about Trudy Dixon, who referred to her cancer as this blessed cancer. Tim also talked about Ram Dass, who made a film about his stroke, and he titled that film Fierce Grace. So profound insight shifts our perspective. So the question, how did the old man enjoy his time as a wild fox? Well, what does it feel like when despair suddenly dissolves into a deep peacefulness? What does that moment feel like? What does it feel like when deep confusion suddenly opens up into clarity? These are powerful moments. So the old man embodied his confusion about causality until it finally opened up into clarity. So seeing the wild fox as a symbol of our insight, we can understand how he enjoyed his time as a wild fox. Because when we're spending time with the wild fox, we'll get many of these little insights. If we're really embodying the wild fox. So I'm going to read a poem that I found by Tony. This is just a few verses from a very long poem by Tony Muffett. Some of you have it on your program. Like a luminous animal, you shine. Like a luminous animal, you open the infinite doors. Like a luminous animal, you dance alone. Like a luminous animal, all you know is what you feel inside. Like a luminous animal, you know the secret of unlearning. I want the day to cloud up. I want the leaves to blow. I crave the storm, the darkness on the edge of the nerves. I want to laugh as I surrender to the wind. I want to be the first drops of rain licking the roofs, a warning that thunder and lightning are coming to play. So in both mythology and Buddhism, thunder and lightning are often used to symbolize flashes of insight. So that poem, what's so wonderful about the poem is that it reveals how the old man and why the old man enjoyed his time as a fox. So for me, the message of this koan is, because of the wild fox, we can enjoy our time as ordinary human beings. Because of the wild fox, we can enjoy our time as ordinary human beings. So now the last part of the story. That evening, Bai Zhang talked about what had happened that day. And then Wang Po asked him, a teacher of old gave a wrong answer and became a wild fox for 500 lifetimes. So what if he'd given the right answer? Bai Zhang said, come closer and I will tell you. Wang Po went closer and slapped Bai Zhang's face. Laughing, Bai Zhang clapped his hands with delight and said, I thought the barbarian had a red beard, but now I see before me the red-bearded barbarian. Okay. I imagine this scene like this. Bai Zhang had been messing with his monks all day long. It started with an announcement of a funeral, which really threw them off. Then he traipsed them after out into the forest and presents this body of a dead fox. Then the bizarre funeral. So I imagine that this all was all pretty intimidating for the monks I mean, this was an ordeal. What was their teacher up to? How were they supposed to respond? And it lasted all day. So for some of them, it may have felt like 500 lifetimes. And now Baijing herded them all back to the monastery after the bizarre funeral, and he told them this story, this crazy story. And then he just sits there and waits. So right now I'm thinking Baijing himself is a pretty clever old fox. So he's waiting. Who among his monks will respond? Oh, Wang Po is stepping up. Now, it didn't say a monk stepped up and asked. It said Wang Po asked. So, you know, that's our cue to listen. Something different is happening here. And his response was in the form of a question, but there was a tone, I imagine, in my mind. There was a tone to it. And Baijing knows that this is not really a question at all. Wang Po is looking for a way to express his understanding of this koan. He has resolved this koan, and he's looking for a way to express his understanding of the koan. So the teacher invites him up. You know, they carry these little teaching staffs, little wooden staffs. So I imagine he's maybe twirling that little teaching staff as he says, come on up, come closer, tell me. So Wang Po stepped forward and he slapped the teacher. This is a perfect ending. What better way to express that you've resolved a koan than by turning it on the teacher? Especially after a day like they've had. He completely turned the koan back onto the teacher. How will the teacher respond? Will he get trapped again, like he did the last time a monk asked him a question? If anger arises, then he's trapped 500 years as a wild fox. But this time, Baijing did not disappoint. He was delighted because conditioned reactivity did not arise. He was delighted. He was so delighted that he compared Wang Po to the great Bodhidharma, which is very high praise. So I want to end just by reading an excerpt from Robert Aiken. Very cool little story. He said, on weekends, I used to walk up a dirt road into the national forest. One day, I came upon a fox, or a fox came upon me, where the road bent around the little ridge. She had come trotting down from above, and I appeared from below. We both stopped and looked at each other. At that moment, the wind came up and blew a large piece of newspaper around and around on the road in a miniature cyclone. The fox jumped on this piece of paper and looked at me with a merry look in her eye. Then she stepped off the newspaper and it began to blow around again. She jumped on the paper again and looked at me, just as though she were inviting me to laugh at her great game. Suddenly, conditions changed, and she ran back up the hill. This encounter was truly an experience of grace. And then he said, when you take up Zen study, your task is to personalize such grace in your own body. So, Baijing and the Wild Fox. I wanted to end with plenty of time for some discussion.
I just wanted to talk about this.
Thank you.
A half an hour. So if I go off too much of a tangent here, feel free to stop. So the fox also represents the trickster, right? The fox is one of the four.
You could say, yes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And then the idea of bodhisattva as a trickster is so wonderful, right? And that appears in so many koans and stories, and Shunri Suzuki, obviously, was a great trickster.
Mm-hmm.
Would do kind of really funny and crazy things to kind of get people out of their comfort zone. And what you mentioned about blended cancer.
Yes, someone who's blessed cancer.
And how much I'm in 12-step group and how much we laugh. We laugh so much.
Mm-hmm.
I remember the first, when I was like 3 weeks really new to the whole 12-step thing, I said, you know, I hate this and I'm effing miserable. And the entire crowd started bursting out about blessing. Because they all got it. And then I was reminded, have you seen the movie, one of my all-time favorite movies, if you haven't seen it, I'm bringing you a copy, Sullivan's Travel, Preston Sturges movie. It could be the metaphor for the life of the Buddha. It's about this pampered, wealthy movie director who has never known suffering. And he only makes these silly comedies and wants to be taken seriously as a movie director. And he wants to direct this movie called Old Brother, Where Art Thou? And that's where the Coen brothers got the title for the movie. And he decides to do so. I'm going to go into the world and know suffering. And basically, through this all this calamity and happenstance, he gets knocked on the head, he goes unconscious, he forgets who he is, and he can't rely on being a wealthy person, and he experiences suffering, and he ends up in this prison, this chain gang, this terrible, terrible, like, southern, you know, Angola-type prison, and he's trying to get out, he can't get out, and he gets put in a hot box and everything, and then he, long story short, finally realizes who he is, that he's a movie director, and yada, yada, yada. And the very last scene in the movie, I'm going to ruin it for everybody. He is sitting in with a bunch of white prisoners in this movie theater. They're going to watch a movie. And this parade of African-American prisoners come in singing a spiritual. And they all sit in the movie theater together. And the movie starts, and it's a Mickey Mouse cartoon. And everybody starts laughing. And he starts laughing. And this whole movie is this homecoming where he realizes the value of what he was doing in the first place as a director of comedy.
Thank you.
Of course, he liked coming back so many times because he got to have so much fun.
Thank you. Yeah. Thanks, Mark. Who else?
Cultures differ, of course. I understand, my understanding of the figure, the fox, in Japanese culture has a little more complexity to it.
Mm-hmm.
It isn't so much that the fox is, I mean, my understanding, which is pretty minimal, but it's through that lens with which I heard the story.
Yeah.
Culturally, foxes are feared by the Japanese.
Mm-hmm.
And so, because they are creatures with power, they can cause all kinds of terrible things to happen. You know, they can steal children. They can do stuff like that. So imagine the teacher, Tim, says, well, a monk just died, and we're going to have to perform this ceremony. And he leads us out to the body of the monk, and the monk turns out to be roadkill, a dead rattlesnake. How would we respond to that?
Yes, and that was pretty. That was some of the other interpretations that I read. You know, the idea of turning the fox into something that's feared reminds me of how during the time of paganism and Christianity was moving in, they took all of their symbols and demonized them and made them symbols to be feared.
But the question I'm asking is, how would you feel?
How would
seeing
I feel?
A dead rattlesnake.
My Buddhist name is Naga. Bury me with dignity, please. Thank you. Guy.
Wanted to have you re-emphasize the fact that there's no one answer to a koan.
Yes.
It's like ink blots, etc. Just to say that it's when you study work with I want you to comment on this. It's mm-hmm. not like you're looking for the answer
right.
to a poem that the master responds to, but rather it's a way of self-discovery. Is that what you're talking about?
Yes, and it's important, too, for me to emphasize that I was not practicing with this koan in the way that is in the Zen way of practicing with a koan. I was working with this story in the same way that I love to work with myths. This is a very, very advanced koan. And, you know, I mean, even Robert Aiken and I guess many others advise don't even look at it until you've been practicing many, many years. So, but we can talk about it. We can investigate it. We can just kind of look into it. So that was the kind of the lighthearted way that I went about just working with this koan and seeing how it opened up and what it might have to say, because I love the mythological elements that it involved, which kind of invited that kind of inquiry, that kind of lighthearted inquiry. So, yeah.
I had a question about when you said that the tree only arises in here, and I reacted a bit because it's like if there's an in here, there's an out there arising, co-arising with in here. And I understand that, you know, I've heard it said that the whole universe is arising inside mm-hmm. our awareness. Is that like an absolute kind of I guess I'm thinking more relatively speaking, interiors and exteriors arise at the same time. So I just kind of wondered about that.
When I said that the tree with its leaves is not out there, what I was pointing to was that I was suggesting that you bring that image inside your own psyche as this beautiful image of a human psyche, rather than the physical tree that's out there. So I was just making a suggestion that might help to internalize this image, rather than, because a tree and its leaves is naturally, you know, it's an externalizing type image. So I was just offering something to help kind of bring it inside. Now, of course, all of these teachings, you know, they have their limitations, and we can quickly bump up against them. But, or we can just kind of merge with them and see how they create openings for us. Because the whole point is so that we can experience some kind of expansion of consciousness. So if you try to analyze it too deeply, then you're going to quickly run up against the limitations of any kind, of any of these teachings and of any metaphor. So you might be pointing to a limitation, and yes, there are absolutely limitations.
Yeah, I guess I appreciate that, and I appreciate your analogy. I wasn't trying to pick apart the time limitation as much as point to, you know, expanding awareness of, I don't know, interiors and exteriors arising at the same time, you know, like the whole tetra arising whole thing. So I wasn't thinking of it as much as the analogy of the tree.
Mm-hmm.
But just like literally, yeah, we can, you know, theorize about a bus, just this object out there from the bus is not really real or something, but we're walking from the bus, I mean, we're in big trouble.
You've definitely hit the limitation of that metaphor. thanks. Who else?
Do you have a take on the beard of barbarian?
Yeah.
The inversion of the.
Did I move into that any deeper to investigate, other than beyond that it was just comparing him to Bodhidharma? No, I did not. Do you?
Well, I was just thinking that. Who was the monk that slapped him? What was his name?
Wang Po slapped Bai Cheng.
So,
yeah.
Wang Po is always a Buddha, but Bai Cheng now sees him as a Buddha. And so evolved with it. He, instead of hating the injured people, he dies over the water.
Are you referring to Baijing not being angry?
Well, when he first responds and becomes a fox for 500 generations, he holds out this imperviousness to cotton effect. And so he doesn't like the cold, the winter cold. It's something he would like to be impervious to. But eventually he understands that he slips into the raging cold water, becomes a raging cold water,
and becomes something like a diamond.
So, so he exchanges bodies with Wang Po.
Okay. Well, that's certainly it's an interesting way to see it. I did not see it that way. Thank you. Anybody else?
I just love what you've done with your red beard.
Thank you. Thank you, Martin. I've always admired yours.
Same beard.
Is that it? Okay. Thanks, everybody.